Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of the Smashy Business Show. Today is August 29th, 2024. It is Thursday, and my name is Hindal Dah. I'm here with my co-host, Abdelmajid Awan. And for today's main stories, we'll talk about UAE France rumors debunked, Meta CEO admits to content moderation, HSBC's new CEO plans, major shakeup. However, before we get into all that, we'll give you some updates of the major...
Of the man in the background.
Yeah, the main man, yeah. Pavel Durov. So can you tell us about that?
What happened was, if you go through the timeline, he was arrested. Then a lot of statements kept coming in. Firstly, it was reported that he's arrested. Then French President Emmanuel Macron, he confirmed his arrest in a tweet, in a post on X, that it's not a politically motivated arrest. Mm-hmm. It's... more probably due to the case that they've put against the French prosecutors. And till that time,
he actually put up a new tweet after the updates today. And let me just pull up the tweet for you. But in French, he said something about liberty. So let me actually just translate the text
liberty,
for you.
Liberty, that's like one of their slogans.
Yes, exactly. So this was 8 hours ago, around the time that the announcement of...
him coming out was made.
Yeah, so he just put out a tweet saying, long live France. And of course, this brought a lot of backlash of people bringing the conversation of... well, you say, you know, you're to liberty and, like, you know,
freedom
France
of speech,
and
basically freedom in its truest sense.
Yeah.
So the conversation has been a lot about freedom of speech since the Telegram founder, Pavel Durov, was arrested. Yesterday, tell you the legal things that happened. In very simple terms, Pavel was taken to the court because he was the French police is only allowed to keep him in custody for 96 hours. So as soon as the 96 hours ended, he was sent to a French court. The French court decided that they're putting him under supervision now. He has to report to a police station every single week. He has to pay a bail of 5 million euros, and he must remain in France under judicial supervision.
So he cannot leave the territory of France.
He can't leave. France is not that bad of a country. He can live there. It's very nice, actually.
But it's the fact that he is technically imprisoned in the country of France.
Yeah, so he's country prisoned, I guess.
From like north to south to Paris to Marseille,
so
wherever.
He's been put under formal investigation now, in legal terms. First, before that, for 96 hours, he was under informal investigation. Police were trying to get something out of him. He didn't say anything. A lot of newspapers, a lot of media houses, Reuters, AP, they all tried to talk to his lawyer as well.
But he did not.
The French lawyer. The French lawyer didn't respond. We haven't seen anything from Pavel on Telegram or anywhere till now. Maybe now he's out, he'll get a good sleep in the bed, and then maybe he will... maybe say something.
Yeah.
So we're waiting for that.
Or at least Telegram might respond or say something.
But Telegram, the only thing that they said when his arrest was... The arrest happened at the Le Bourget airport in France, near Paris. What they said was that he hasn't done anything wrong. Telegram abides by all the EU regulations on content moderation and everything else. They're perfectly in sync with the law. So, again... Telegram can issue a statement. He can issue a statement. We're waiting for that. As soon as it happens, we'll give you an update. Obviously, you can always follow us on social media. And all the current and quick updates are there. But this show is for the details. And the detail that we discussed in the morning was, what does this mean about the freedom of speech?
Right.
Because when you talk about all the big CEOs, all the big founders of all these social media platforms, websites, anything that you talk about, it's about what content should be given to the government and what content should not be given to the government.
Yes.
How much access should you give to the US government or any government when you create a platform and take it global? Because a lot of laws in a lot of countries are different for a lot of things.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, the CEO of Meta, Mark Zuckerberg, has been under scrutiny especially during 2020, because a lot of people, you know, it was known that Facebook was selling its users' data to the government. And even more recently, it came out that the CEO, Mark Zuckerberg, admits to content moderation mistakes and government pressure. So this also brings the question, well, you know, sometimes some sketchy things happen on these websites, and is it like an obligation from the owners of these platforms to give these the data to the government? And if so, what's the limitation? Do you give it to everybody, all the users, or is it just, you know?
Yeah, see, again, it's very complicated because Telegram doesn't share any kind of chat data that you talk about to each other with anyone. Even the Telegram owners, Telegram founders, Telegram developers, the engineers, no one can read your chats. So it's very difficult to moderate content on a platform where encryption is so heavy and the privacy factor is like the USP of Telegram, that no one can read your chats, talk about whatever you want. Now, this gives rise to a lot of problems in relation to crime. That's the main word that we can use, crime. Because if you can't read what people are talking about, obviously people can use your platform to talk about stuff which is not legal.
Right.
So this is what is happening. Pavel right now is in France. Pavel will not move out of France. These investigations, I was reading that they can take like years. Mm-hmm. It's not just like you can start and finish it in a week. These can take years because prosecution will present their evidence. The defense from Pavel's side will present their evidence. He has been convicted for complicity. Mm-hmm. Complicity is like, oh, you're the second person. You knew this was happening and you didn't stop it. So let's see what happens. Again, a legal case. Legal findings will tell us what happens. The burden of proof right now is on the French prosecutors. They need to present all the facts that they can to say that, oh, this guy was involved. Mm-hmm. So let's see. Very complicated.
Yes.
Since you talked about Meta CEO,
yeah,
that's also a very good point, in my opinion, because Meta, they were not, they even when you open WhatsApp, when you're listening to it, open your WhatsApp, you'll and start a new chat with someone, the person you've never talked to, and there's a message always displayed on the top saying your chat is end-to-end encrypted.
That's correct.
That means neither we can read it nor anyone can.
It's just you and the messenger, yeah. And that's that. There's nobody in the middle trying to get into your messages and your chat box and whatever. Another thing that we talked about yesterday about the Pavel story is a lot of fake news have been coming out, and those are completely bogus claims. So one is the UAE freezing contracts for the Rafael
F4 jets
from France.
We talked about it a lot in detail yesterday. So you can always go to Apple Podcasts. You can always go to YouTube, Smashy Business, and listen to that. The main important thing about that conversation yesterday, to summarize it in a sentence, was media literacy. You need to understand what to read and what to believe. Mm-hmm. You can read everything, obviously, but reading good sources, places which actually report stuff. And in this age of social media, everyone gets his news from Facebook.
From X, WhatsApp, I think.
Yeah,
and
from
it,
X.
The fake news runs rampant on X, so it's very important to not just take something you read on there as is. You literally have to go, it's not even one step beyond, it's just the basic media literacy of fact-checking your sources.
So what happened was French President Emmanuel Macron was allegedly said to have invited Pavel Durov. And what everyone on social media took the story and ran with it. And
the
problem
jets.
Is 10 million followers, you're not fact-checking anything. And same with the fighter jets. Mm-hmm. Everyone just took a video which had a Al Jazeera logo and ran with it.
But which is not from Al Jazeera, just to be clear.
Yeah, everyone was clear. Al Jazeera timelines, you can always go if you have like 10 minutes, scroll through them, you will not find that video. So all of this happens and no one checks it. And the problem is with people with so many followers, when they share something, there is a certain kind of responsibility attached. You can't just share anything.
Mm-hmm.
So the same thing happened with the Macron case. Everyone, there's a French satire newspaper that shared this thing that, oh, he invited him to dinner and then Pavel got arrested. So it's a satire newspaper. You have to understand. They say it very clearly in their title on their website that it's a satire newspaper. Even their name, the French name says satire newspaper. So no one understood the meaning of satire and they just ran with
it. Or they did, but deliberately yeah. tried to just
so I guess
ignore that.
It, the race for followers and the race for breaking the news before anyone else, that puts you in a rat race and you shouldn't be a part of
it. See, another thing about X is that when you subscribe, you can monetize your tweets.
Yeah.
So a lot of people make these fake tweets knowing they will get a lot of engagement.
Yeah.
Which brings them money. So I think that's also a big reason.
And that's
for
also
those
a question for freedom of speech. When do you stop people from saying what they want to say and what is allowed, what is not allowed? Content moderation, it's not like a simple ABCD game that you know A is A, B is B. Again, every social media has a different founder. He comes from a different background. He has different ideologies. He supports a different political party. He has a whole schooling before he creates a certain platform. So Pavel, he thinks there should be no content moderation, zero. Musk is in favor of freedom of speech. So he also, on his platform, which he bought, turned Twitter to X, made life difficult for us because sometimes we're calling it Twitter, sometimes we're calling it X. So yeah, that guy, Elon Musk, he also says that there should be freedom of speech, people should be allowed to say whatever they want. And then there's Mark Zuckerberg. He says, I do content moderation. I don't allow people to post just anything. And the specifically the story was that he said during Biden administration, They were told to tone down COVID stories and even satire and funny content around it. So
now there could be a stance taken on the COVID moderation that because we saw a lot of misinformation and disinformation surrounding COVID, and at the time people weren't too familiar with the coronavirus. So from a stance of the government, it's like, well, we need to moderate so that there's no. People don't react negatively or there's no mass hysteria surrounding the subject. So there could be, that point of view.
At the peak of COVID, everyone was at home. They didn't have anything to do apart from watching shows and eating food, cooking. A lot of people learned cooking during that time. Mm-hmm. But the other thing was they were always on social media trying to find out about the new variant, about the new symptoms, about what was happening around COVID.
And there were absurd videos and claims surrounding it. So
even in the subcontinent, the part where I belong, there was like, we call them desi totkas. They're like herbal medicines that were created by people. And there was this herb, I remember very correctly, it was hardly 200 Pakistani rupees. That's like 2 dirhams for a kg. The price shot up to nearly 200 dirhams.
Wow.
If I converted into dirhams, it went up to 200 dirhams per kg. So that is we saw with the masks.
Mm-hmm.
We never even bought it for like more than 10 Pakistani rupees, like hardly 0.5 dirhams.
Mm-hmm.
But then they shot up and it was for 10 dirhams, 20 dirhams, went up to 50 dirhams.
Let's not get into COVID again. I'm getting flashbacks.
But the question here is, if he was moderating content around COVID, what kind of content they stop? There's no explanation from him. He just said that, Biden administration told me to tone down the content. And we did tone down the content. And then the second point was that there were a lot of allegations on the Biden family. For a lot of fraud allegations and that, and the administration told him to remove a lot of content or stop a lot of content, and it was said to be Russian propaganda by the US government. Mark Zuckerberg said that later it was proved that it was not Russian propaganda. So he's now taking a stand which is nearly equal to what Musk and Pavel are saying.
Right.
Freedom of speech, we will moderate the content.
They're all heading that
direction. Yeah. So I guess it's the populist mandate of social media right now that our users, because their users earn them the money, the more the interactions, the more the likes. So they're going towards the user-centric belief that there should be less content moderation as possible.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, this is the whole update because a lot of things are linked to each other. Powell being arrested, him standing for free speech, freedom of speech. Then a lot of misinformation being spread around the news. So always go to official sources. Mm-hmm. Everyone is on social media. The official sources are there. Just go and check them. Mm-hmm. Takes like 2 seconds.
Yeah. So Majid, let's talk a bit about the Pentagon report that there was a potential oil spill in the Red Sea. So the Yemen's Houthi rebels attacked the Greek flag oil tanker last week, and it is still burning in the Red Sea. However, we have some new updates regarding the oil spill, and it's that, can you tell us about that?
Yeah, CNN recently reported, like, in the morning that the EU mission, which is present in the Red Sea, EU mission means the ships that are there, they've reported that they've checked and there's no oil leakage. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, the oil leakage report created, again, not mass hysteria, but if it had happened, if the oil had leaked, it would have been one of the biggest oil leaks in mm-hmm. the history. And Red Sea is already seeing a lot of trade problem because when you take the Red Sea and you take the Suez Canal, that's a shortcut. So the trade between the regions is stopped. There's a lot of problems that we see for Egypt because they have some control of the Suez Canal. Their port handles a lot of ships that come in. Mm-hmm. So they earn a lot of money from it. So Egypt is facing a problem. The countries which are sending oil are facing a problem. The countries which are receiving the oil are facing a problem. And the Houthi rebels, the Yemen Houthis, they're saying that just stop the genocide in Gaza and we'll stop. So again, it's a very complicated geopolitical situation. What they did is they have actually attacked 3 ships till now. Mm. Nearly 15 people have died in those attacks. And the main important thing is, thankfully, the oil is not spilling.
Right.
Apparently, even the shots were
fired. It would have been a huge ecological disaster.
Already the seas, the condition of the seas, we've seen so much about sustainability problems of our oceans. Mm-hmm. They're like 2/3 of our world, so yeah.
Yep.
Seas should not be polluted. Don't throw garbage in the seas, and then please don't do something. I remember nearly a decade ago, there was an oil spill near the Arabian Sea, and we lived there. Mm-hmm. We lived right next to the Arabian Sea in Karachi in Pakistan. So I remember the sea water actually changed. We would find dead animals on the shore whenever we went there. So I've actually seen what happens when there is an oil spill. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you think, oh, oil and water don't mix, so it will maybe settle down or something. It's nearly impossible to clean all of that.
And is it temporary or?
It is temporary, but like, for 5-6 years, the effects remain. You have to clean up all of it. Mm-hmm. It's a long, long drill. It's not that easy. It's not just like you just go and take a spoon mm-hmm. and clean it or tissue paper. It's very difficult because, again, they don't mix.
Sure.
Thankfully, they don't mix also because if oil and water mix, the whole sea will be polluted as well.
Right. So let's talk a little bit more about another small story, and then we'll get into our final main story. So Emirates is back at the U.S. Open, and they'll be offering a top-tier hospitality experience in their suite, which is inspired by the airline's first-class cabins. And the suite is in its 13th year as part of the Emirates sponsorship, and it will feature gourmet buffets, champagne and caviar service, and attentive flight attendants. So if you find yourself at the U.S. Open, make sure to check out Emirates Suites. I'm sure you'll enjoy it.
Just watch it from the outside. Maybe you won't get access because it's for their top-tier clients.
Right.
But maybe you can buy a ticket there. Buy it from a friend who is a top-tier person in Emirates. But this is good for the airline. There's another part attached to the story that they're giving nearly $2.5 million to tennis academies which work in underdeveloped areas, poor areas, for kids to not go into bad things, illegal things.
Oh,
and
that's wonderful.
Develop a skill set, a sports skill set, and maybe then compete in the world. So that is one part of that whole initiative. Emirates has been doing this for the last 13 years, but the main crazy thing this year was that they created the suite around the first class. Mm-hmm. And Emirates has been in the stories for their change of business class, yes, in the new planes.
They're called the retrofitted.
Yeah, the retrofitted cabin seating where you don't face the captain, yeah, you face away from it. Mm-hmm. So good measures, I guess, very good marketing tactics, mm-hmm, good activations, crazy ideas coming from one of our own airlines, mm-hmm, Emirates. That is why we're happy to talk about it.
Yes. So let's move on to our final story. HSBC's new CEO, Georges El-Hadary, plans a major shakeup amid leadership transition. So Georges is Lebanese, and that's why we're excited to talk about him. We're always happy to talk about Arab CEOs and leaders. And he's considering a significant overhaul of the bank's management structure because he will take over in early September. So he's making plans to kind of change management and everything. And he's also making HSBC's global network more easy with these changes. And he'll also be focusing more on Asia and the GCC, which are profitable regions for the bank.
What HSBC is doing is basically following Citibank and Standard Chartered. The changes that we're talking about, it's removing the middle management layer. Mm-hmm. So now, what I saw, the numbers said that they had nearly 5,000 people and now they're down to 3,500 and eventually they're focusing on going to 2,000 people. So mm-hmm, what they'll do is they'll eventually remove the middle managers. They're talking about removing the country managers. Mm-hmm. So maybe they'll put in place regional managers. So right, one regional manager may cover.
So a lot of jobs will be lost.
Yeah, yeah, that is always a problem with management shakedowns. A lot of people lose their jobs. But again, I remember the Starbucks CEO when he came. I read Brian Collins when he came. I read a Harvard Business Review study that whenever some new guy comes in, whenever a new CEO comes in, you have to put yourself in front of him, tell him, I am a useful person. Mm. See, even if you're a country manager, the idea is go in front of him, prove that you are worth it.
Yes. Yeah.
And then this is one trick. And the other trick is, try to follow what his workflow is, what his idea of an ideal workflow is.
So when what his management style is, yeah, possibly. Mm-hmm.
So when you do that, you'll obviously become a star in the eyes of the CEO. And maybe if you're a job. You'll keep your job. So yeah, the good part is that El-Hadary has a lot of experience within HBC. He's mm-hmm, been with the bank for a lot of years. He started as a sales something, and then he moved into the management roles. So currently he's the CFO, mm-hmm, yes, and then he'll move to obviously the CEO position. He has been a CFO for 2 years now. Mm-hmm. So HSBC is facing losses in a lot of things, in wealth management funds and a lot of things. So Citibank, Standard Chartered did it, HSBC is doing it. They brought a Lebanese guy. That's good for the Arab world, mm-hmm, and the Arab region and for our stories as well.
Yeah.
Seeing an Arab guy leading a big bank, mm-hmm, or any big firm for that matter. So let's see. Hopefully he brings that experience.
Yeah. I mean, Noel Quinn, who is the current CEO, is helping him during this transition. So I think it'll be a smooth transition for both of them.
And since they're focusing on Asia and GCC, we talked about it. You told me actually in the morning that he's learned Mandarin.
Yes.
So yeah, during his sabbatical, Mandarin, he learned Mandarin as well. So he has some connection to the Asia. China is a big powerhouse in Asia.
Yes.
So yeah, Mandarin will come in handy. And he's mm-hmm, Arab, so he speaks Arabic fluently. Mm-hmm. English is like, you have to do it. So best thing to do is to put this CEO here. HSBC will do great with him, hopefully. We will pray for it. So this is the rundown, the whole thing that we discussed today, ending with the HSBC. We started with Pavel Durov. Pavel Durov has done a great job on standing on his stance. Mm-hmm. He's not moving and France has country locked him. He can't leave France. He has to report to a police station every twice in a week. And he has paid 5 million euros.
On bail.
Meta CEO Mark Zuckerberg admitted that he was doing content moderation during the Biden administration, which is soon leaving. The elections are coming near, the US elections. So that's a question on free speech, which Pavel is taking a stand for. Mm-hmm. And lastly, we talked about HSBC's new CEO, Also, we discussed some Emirates Airlines new business suite at the U.S. Open. So
yeah, so if you missed, if you just joined us during the second half, you can catch us on the all the podcasts on the streaming platforms like Anghami, Apple Podcasts, and Spotify. You can also follow us on TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, and X. And thank you for joining us on the Smashy Business Show, a Smashy Business production, part of the Augustus Podcast Network. We'll see you tomorrow.
Bye-bye.